broadcast contains subject matter that may offend liberal snowflakes. It's the War Room with Owen Schroyer. Watch the live stream at Infowars.com/show.
All right, big broadcast today lined up with great guests. Free speech is under attack. I'm going to be joined by a free speech attorney, Mark Randazza, on the other side. But first, here's a report from Leanne McAdoo.
Today's action sends a critical message. The United States no longer makes empty threats. When I make promises, I keep them.
President Trump makes it a point to let the world know that he is a man of his word and that the U.S. is no longer making empty threats. So, in that vein, we need to take what he says seriously and not let it slide when the president is venting about all of the negative news coverage of him and threatening reporters to revoke their credentials or revoke the licensing of major news networks. You know, he says that they are reporting fake news about him, and they very well may be, but this is something that a president or a future tyrant could use to shut down any dissenting voices. President Trump lashed out again this week at reporters who cover him negatively following the publication of a survey from the Media Research Center. It showed a dramatic negative news slant from the top three networks and their coverage about the president. The group studied all broadcast evening news coverage of the president from January 1st through April 30th, and they found that 90% of the evaluative comments about Trump were negative. And this is the same hostile tone that they documented in 2017. And they went on to say, despite all of this hostile coverage, Trump's overall job approval rating actually rose. The Media Research Center didn't even include CNN or MSNBC in its research. Can you imagine? It would have been closer to 100% negative coverage. Now, I get it why President Trump has long been critical of the White House press corps' coverage of him. He's branded them fake news, called them the enemy of the American people. You know, I can't blame him. The media has been out for blood ever since Trump beat their preferred candidate, Hillary Clinton. With that being said, the U.S. Constitution's First Amendment says that the federal government cannot take any action abridging the freedom of speech or of the press. The ability for journalists to do their jobs and the First Amendment itself should not be tampered with just because we are in a current state of crisis with overtly negative news coverage of our president and we're having to sift through. We don't even know if it's real or if it's fake. So just because that's the current state of the Fourth Estate does not mean that we should be shutting down the ability of journalists to do their jobs. And of course, Matt Drudge, he posted a rare personal tweet to warn about what could be next from the White House. Drudge tweeted, "I fear the future result of Trump's crusade on fake news will be licensing of all reporters. Democrats already floated this in the Senate pre-Trump. The mop-up on this issue is going to be excruciating. Government registration and licensing requirements of journalists and reporters would mean that they get to determine who is allowed to disseminate their views to the public. And of course, it would be whoever is sifted through and filtered through and approved by the powers that be." Back in 2013, Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein proposed amending a media shield law. She wanted to limit the law's protections to only real reporters. And according to Madam Feinstein, a real reporter is a salaried agent of a media company like the New York Times or ABC News. So if you're a blogger or you work in alternative media or you're a student journalist or an independent citizen who's out there with the phone capturing things that are of value to the public interest, you would not be protected under this amendment. The Free Flow of Information Act is meant to preserve the right of journalists to refuse to disclose their sources, even if they're under oath. But the amendment, of course, I labeled it at the time, false flag legislation meant to turn free speech into a privilege because it would diminish the ability of independent journalists to safely conduct their valid research and go find corruption with big corporations and everything. They would be open to government subpoenas and legal action that could be taken by those that they were investigating and reporting on. So fake news or not.
May 11th, 2018. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Owen Schroyer. Mark Randazza is in studio with me. We're going to talk about free speech, the attacks on free speech, how they use lawsuits to attack free speech and to demonize people. We're going to get into all of that. Matt Bracken will be joining me as well. Roger Stone takes over the second hour. And then Fleckus talks in the third hour. So a loaded broadcast. And we may actually go back into the time capsule and show you a little video we put together about Mad Maxine Waters. Boy, did she do a number on the floor of Congress, moaning and complaining about being a victim. A millionaire black woman who's been in government for decades, griping about her life. Give me a break. So, we're going to have all of that. In the meantime, you've got the Wall Street Journal reporting about the FBI, Comey's FBI, having a mole in the Trump campaign. So that breaks. They're trying to prop up this Mueller probe right now that's totally falling apart. So we'll have more on that later, as well as other developments like the judge awarding $3.5 million to different Tea Party groups for the Obama IRS targeting scandal. So we'll have all of that news and more as well. But first, my guest, Mark Randazza, is in studio with me. Now, Mark, you are a free speech attorney. You've seen free speech cases all over the world. You've studied free speech law all over the world. And the one thing about here in America that we have that most other countries don't have is a right to free speech. We have the First Amendment. It's built. It's what this country was founded upon. So we can always go back to that. But it seems right now it's kind of being interpreted different ways. Some people think free speech is one thing. Some people think free speech is another thing. But we were talking about this before. What happened to, I may disagree with what you say, but I will fight to the death for your right to say it. I feel like we've lost that mantra in the West.
Well, let me just correct one thing. We're not the only ones with a right to freedom of expression. The EU Constitution protects freedom of expression. The Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms does the same thing. I think our First Amendment has been more broadly interpreted, and we are, you know, we were for a long time, and I still think in some ways we are a beacon for freedom of expression. You know, it was anywhere that you wanted to point out a positive example for a commitment to freedom of expression, you pointed to the United States. You know, in one place where we really diverge from other common law countries and other free civil law countries is that we have this, you know, if you read the case New York Times versus Sullivan, it discusses a profound national commitment to wide open and robust debate. I mean, you read passages like that, and if you have any sense, you know, in your soul of being an American or what being an American is, those passages from New York Times versus Sullivan are so just star-spangled awesome, you know, that's the kind
and
of stuff.
And that's a landmark case.
It is, yes. I mean, it is the case that establishes that we can, when we criticize people who are in the government, or we criticize, it's been expanded to mean not just public officials, but public figures, that any time we want to criticize them, there's a really heightened state that a plaintiff has to get over in order to silence you or in order to punish you for that. It is probably the high watermark for freedom of expression globally. Because, you know, the Canadians considered it in Hill versus Church of Scientology and rejected it. Other countries, you know, I've looked at, for example, Zambian law. I was working on a case, a defamation case in Zambia, and Zambian law rejects it. Yeah, you know, it's,
they have defamation in Zambia too, huh?
Hey, you know, they have.
Is it as tough there as it is here?
To bring a defamation suit? No, it's a little easier. Most of the world has far more of a commitment to a little less of a commitment, I would say, at least when it comes to private defamation suits.
So I think the debate now that we're having is, okay, so we may not be having the immediate threat from the government. I mean, there are lawmakers out there that have said certain things that you could view as a threat to free speech. But outside of the realm of government, where you have landmark cases, you have the First Amendment,
yeah,
it seems like the real attacks are coming from industry. The real attacks are coming from these social media giants where everybody's there, and that's kind of the means for communication, and they're deciding what gets seen, what doesn't get seen. So now I think that there's two debates. One, do you have the right as Facebook, as Twitter, to censor whoever you want and to decide what content goes out upon your platforms?
Right.
And then two, do you now have to look at certain regulations to make sure that these platforms have free speech? So I think that you're kind of in the middle of that right now, and there really isn't a legal precedent for this debate, at least that I know of.
You know, I think we got to be specific when we're talking about First Amendment versus free speech. And, you know, it's the value that underlies the First Amendment. What you said before that, you know, I disagree with what you say, but I'll fight to the death your right to say it. A quote that is misattributed to Voltaire, but still, if you, you know,
I said that hundreds of years ago. Yes,
it really wraps it up when you say that, you know, and when you see, when you saw, for example, when Alan Dershowitz standing up for the rights of Nazis to march. I mean, that right there is such. If aliens came down and said, "Explain what America is," I would say it's that idea right there. Somebody, you know, we have a Jewish lawyer standing up for the rights of somebody who espouses his extermination. That's just like, that just makes you want to you just see eagles in red, white, and blue at that moment. That's what it means. Cause people don't, you know, when you want to think about what is America, when I try to explain this to people, when I go to Europe and I talk about freedom of expression and I say, look, America is not, there's no such thing as quote unquote an American ethnically, right? You know, genetically, I don't know what the hell you are, but, you know, I'm Sicilian and Swedish. I don't think we share any common ancestors back to, you know, probably.
Doubt it.
Maybe back
some
to,
Swedish.
Maybe Lucy at some point, you know, in Ethiopia, right? But, you know, right now there's somebody in Hawaii, a native Hawaiian, and somebody in Maine, and someone in Key West, and someone descended from slaves. You know, we are all in this mix together, but it's not an ethno state. It's not a religious state. You know, it's not like Israel where everybody's bound by Judaism, or Albania where everybody's bound by being Albanian. America's just an idea. Like, that's all we are. We're an idea. And if that idea means anything, it means a commitment to freedom of expression and the rule of law. And when you start saying you want to throw that out because you have a political tribe that you've created that you think is somehow superior to that idea, like, that just means that the idea is in danger of being extinguished.
So would you say right now, if free speech is under attack in America, would you say it's more of a legal issue or more of a cultural issue?
It's both, really. You know, because you were right when you said earlier that it's somewhat a legal frontier, because we want to say that private businesses can make a decision about who they're going to serve. So, you know, you don't have to have me on this show if you don't like what I have to say. You stop this interview right now and say, be gone with you. That's not violating my First Amendment rights. But I could also go out there and I could say what I want on my own internet channel. But what happens when you get targeted? And what happens when you have this cartel of, you know, just a few companies that are all philosophically aligned who simply decide that one piece of the debate doesn't belong? And then that circle grows, and it grows further and further because they're drunk with power right now. And when our free speech rights, you know, at one time, the internet had this promise that it was going to bring every voice to the marketplace of ideas. I mean, it did initially, right? I mean, it was, when the internet first came out, you had all these crazy websites with any number of things on it. It was both entertaining.
It was the new Wild Wild West.
It was entertaining and informative. It would have all these new news sites came out that were bringing news to you that the legacy media didn't bring you. I mean, heck, porn, the ubiquity of, you know, I don't just bring that up irreverently.
Like top three sites or something after a couple of news sites or something were all porn or something.
But you know, porn drove the growth of the internet.
But let's get into what could be a legal issue with this when it comes to the attacks culturally on free speech that could end up as a defamation suit potentially.
Yeah.
So we'll get to that on the other side with Mark Randazza. Don't go anywhere. All right, welcome back to the War Room. Mark Randazza in studio with me. We were just having a brief conversation with Alex Jones. America, as you were saying, is an idea.
Yeah.
And part of that idea, what we were discussing earlier, is a commitment. It's a mutual commitment, a mutual understanding of independence, of freedom, where everybody in the tribe understands that you have a commitment to free speech. You have a commitment to even the freedom to bear an arm, to arm yourself, protect your family, have private property, have privacy. You know, that is the cultural, the intellectual commitment that you make in the idea of America. And now, as you were saying, these private corporations have gotten so powerful and so drunk with power. Well, they're kind of breaking that social compact. They're kind of deciding to go off on their own, and they think they're bigger than the tribe.
Well, they are.
And so now, so this is where we come to. So now we enter this new thing where you say, okay, when do you decide something is public forum, and when do you decide when the government can tell you what you can and can't do? And I use this case, and I want to hear what you think about this. So we had a famous case, I'm sure you're familiar with it, where a gay couple wanted a cake shop to bake a cake for their wedding. Well, they said, no, we're not going to do this. Sorry, go down the street. Well, they sued. They won the lawsuit. So now that's the government telling you, you have to serve these people. So that, to me, is an attack on their free speech to say no. But then why doesn't that same, if we're going to go down that road, wouldn't you say that same precedent should apply to Twitter and Facebook, where you say, hey, look, then you have to include InfoWars. You may hate us, but you have to include us.
It's a little different because in that Masterpiece Bake Shop case, what you had is, first, you have anti-discrimination laws. So you can't discriminate against a customer because of their sexual orientation in most states. Now, I think that's just fine. And in that case, had the customers simply come in and wanted to buy something that was there and been discriminated against, I would say that the shop was wrong. But in that case, you're actually asking the person who is making the cake to make something that is in opposition to their beliefs. It violates their freedom of conscience to do it. And that is compelled speech. So in that circumstance, you know, while I disagree with the bake shop owner, I mean, I'm profoundly committed to gay rights. I think gay marriage is a wonderful thing. If they want to be miserable like the rest of us, let them be it. But
apparently they're less miserable. Their divorce rates are lower.
Are they? Well, yeah. You know, hey.
Let me just interrupt and let me ask this question, because that's my point. I would bake the cake. If I opened up my shop, I would just bake the cake unless, you know, they wanted me to put pedophile stuff on it or something. But, and then that's the point. There's got to be some level for your religious or cultural or just moral reasons to be able to say, I dissent to this.
Sure.
I personally, you know, do the gay couple cake, whatever. I mean, I want their business. I don't care. I'm a libertarian. But what if I was an Orthodox Jewish shop and I wanted them to put, you know, to roast a pig for me? You know, they're a meat shop. I come in and say, I want you to roast a pig for me. And they're like, no, we're Orthodox Jews. We don't involve ourselves with pork. Or what if they're Muslims and I come in and I want them to do something? I mean, at a certain point, let's say Muslims, you know, owned an animal grooming shop, but they think dogs are unclean. I bring my dog in. They say our religion is we don't clean dogs, which is in Islam. You know, the dogs in evil creatures, which that shows real problem with Islam. But the whole point is I don't like Islam because it's not open and free. That's why I'm always pissed at it. So, and then I'm told, oh, but accept it. So getting back to the pig issue, you know, what if... Or what if it was a Jewish-owned bakery and I wanted them to say GD God, or just spell God all the way out? And the Orthodox Jews in New York said, we're not doing that. That's blasphemy. Do I get $500,000 from them?
That's a good example. You know, if you did come in and you wanted, for example, as a Christian, you wanted some scripture that was antithetical to the beliefs of the Jewish cake shop owner. And he says, you know, look, I'm really sorry. Here's a cake with nothing written on it. You're free to use my, I don't know what the hell you call the
tools,
cake thing.
Whatever.
Free to use this to write it yourself, but, you know, I'm very sorry, but I can't do that. I don't think he's discriminating against the Christians. Similarly, you know, if this bake shop owner, I just can't believe that the civil rights battle of our time has come down to, you know, baking a damn cake. But, you know, it really has.
But it had to. It had to be some sort of gay rights thing. That's, you know, it's
you know,
always...
Really, you know, one of the things that, you know, when you saw gay marriage passing, I think, you know, the culture was ready for it. Most of us were ready for it. I thought it was a wonderful thing. But, you know, one of the promises was, look, nobody's going to try to, like, impose their values on you. You know, when people said, well, if gay marriage is okay, well, then my marriage means nothing. I said, well, then your marriage must be kind of, you know, really screwed up if it has any influence on your marriage at all. But you know, it doesn't intrude on you. But now when you have somebody being compelled to create something, even something so trifling as frosting on a cake, you know, that takes this thing that was pure before, just a pure fight about liberty, a pure fight about equality, and now uses it as a cudgel in the culture wars.
Exactly. And that's wrong. To this level now where they say don't have mother and father on entrance exams or on entrance, you know, forms for schools, and it's becoming law. And so it's the next level of, okay, I'm an open free society guy. I'm a tolerance guy. Now you're going to force feed me it. That's what's dangerous. And now you're allied with the big tech giants.
Right.
Not just saying ban Alex Jones from the internet, but then misrepresent what I've said and then not let me even respond. That's where I'm getting concerned.
But see, here's where when we bring it back to this internet debate, where what I've just told you can be used right back against us, because I have a problem. You know, imagine if there was only one cake company in the entire country, or some cake conglomerate went and bought up every cake shop and then said they weren't going to do it. Now you've got another situation.
Which is kind of the direction we're going in right now with the internet and the free speech on social media.
We need to hold the big powerful groups more to task, and then little people need to have more leeway. Yeah. And that's why it should work. Big, massive groups are the ones that need the chains on them. But instead, like you said, they're free.
Or at some point, you know, maybe the antitrust department can wake up and do its job. I mean, you know,
that's been a long time coming. That's beyond just social media.
Right, but if it would wake up and do its job, I mean, the fact is that when you have this ubiquity, when you have this control of, this huge control of the market for social media, I mean, Facebook is the only social media company left. I mean, you know, Friendster, you know, it's a lost civilization, right? Yeah, you're probably not even old enough to remember Friendster.
I don't know Friendster.
Yeah, it's like there's like ruins somewhere that you can find that lost civilization. But when you have that, and then you have them using that to squelch the marketplace of ideas, it's, you know, I hate using this term, but it's damn un-American. So this is the problem. And you do have, you know, when we talked about in the break, you do have some kind of legal theory here that...
I don't mean to interrupt because I'm going to leave now and let you guys take over, but I'm watching. When you come back, get into your legal theory now, but I want to ask you, what is the solution? Because I agree. They create these things bigger than governments, bigger than whole economies, like Facebook. They created the monopoly with it open and free. Now they're taking it away. Now they've lured us in, like the cartoon where the cat tongue rolls out and the mouse thinks it's a bar that it's going into. Now that we're in its mouth, it's closing its jaws. What do we do to stop that? And like you said earlier, it's just power mad, the arrogance of these groups and organizations. I think the public first has to recognize this is happening.
Well, you know, as far as like what you can do about it, there are, you know, if I was smart enough to know how to fix it, I'd probably be
making,
you know,
your own social media.
Yeah. So I'm probably not that bright, but I will give you some bright ideas.
But then, and this is what we were talking about in the break too, how do you even compete when Facebook is already in the system where all the commercials, all the marketing, it all goes to Facebook. It all directs to Google. It all directs to Twitter. I mean, that's what you do now. You see anyone on TV, they do an interview, boom, there's their Facebook. Boom, there's their Twitter. So it's already kind of intertwined in our culture.
They have a market position that, you know, is
all right,
we're
going to go to break. We're going to get more to this on the other side. Don't go anywhere.
Warning. This broadcast is not for the weak-minded. It's The War Room with Owen Schroyer at Infowars.com/show.
Mark Randazza is my guest, Randazza.com. He has all kinds of legal experience dealing with free speech, the First Amendment, in fact, all over the world. Matt Bracken is going to be joining us soon as well. But I want to give you the platform here, Mark, to explain something you were getting into. We got a bunch of precedents and a bunch of questions that we need to get into, but you think there's kind of some groundwork that can be laid now if people had more of an understanding of the legal system that's already there.
There can, yeah. I mean, like these big platforms, I think there is one way of looking at them. There's an old decision called Pruneyard, which holds that even when something's private property, it can become a public forum if it functions as a public forum. Now, civil libertarians have a problem with this because it also looks at private property and essentially takes it as a public forum. So this is not a theory that is without its dangers. But, you know, there's another thing, and how these companies got so big. And what is that they've enjoyed this tremendous immunity under what's called Section 230. See, back in the Clinton administration, they passed what was called this Communications Decency Act. And what it was is it was supposed to get porn off the internet. And how'd that work out?
That's funny. That's like the war on drugs, supposed to keep drugs off the streets. How'd that work?
Yeah, it didn't work out well at all. But also the Supreme Court struck down the Communications Decency Act, but left intact an immunity that was left there. So it's really an accidental immunity. But what it does is it says that, for example, if somebody posts something defamatory about you on Facebook, well, you sue the person who posted it. You can't sue Facebook because they have this federal immunity. Same thing with Twitter. You can't sue Twitter if somebody puts something defamatory on it, unless Twitter actually makes the content themselves. And everybody loved this idea. But, you know, now when we see these companies have grown so big and so powerful and so, you know, untouchable in large part because of this, well, what are they giving us back in exchange for this immunity? This isn't constitutional immunity. This is just a statute and an accidental one at that. And I would suggest that if they want to enjoy that immunity, well, they need to give something back. And they should only enjoy that immunity if they also agree to subject themselves to the same regulations the government would be under in a First Amendment case. Well, so if they can censor on the basis of viewpoint, and if they do censor on the basis of viewpoint, then take away their Section 230 immunity. And let's see, do they believe more in free speech or do they believe more in that immunity? And I think they're going to like that immunity so much that they're also going to finally embrace the First Amendment.
Well, and I think that brings me back to the question of, okay, are you going to be a public forum?
Right.
Or are you going to stay independent? Where I said in the break, they're playing both sides of the ball.
Sure.
Where they claim to be public forum. Oh yeah, we're not involved. We don't want our hands tied. We don't want to have to deal with regulation and monitoring things. That's how they can kind of throw their hands up and claim innocence.
Right.
If a terrorist, you know, recruits somebody on their social.
Exactly.
Oh, we're not a public forum. We don't monitor everything. We're too big. But they do. They do monitor everything. They do have the algorithms. They do censor certain free speech that they disagree with. So they're kind of playing both sides of the aisle there. I want to bring Matt Bracken in, who is joining us now to discuss this. You know, I think that this is an issue where we really don't have legal precedent right now, but we could be on the verge of seeing something soon when it comes to this, Matt. You know, Matt, I'm sure that you're familiar with all the censorship that conservatives, Trump supporters are dealing with right now on these big social media platforms. I mean, what do you think the answer is to dealing with these social media giants?
I'm not convinced that we're not already too far behind the curve, that the giants like Google and Google, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, they're so massive now. I think they have more power than Congress. When Zuckerberg went to those hearings, it was like little puppy dogs, you know, in front of a giant megalo. Even though he was so little, he needed to sit in a booster seat. Clearly, the power is not with Congress anymore. Not to mention that they can contribute to every politician out there, make them all dependent on Facebook so that they don't even care, really. Facebook, I think, can do whatever it wants. Same thing with Google, Alphabet, YouTube, all of them. It might be too late. We might already be talking about, you know, how to keep the horses in the barn, but the horses are gone.
Yeah, actually, Matt brings up a great point here, Mark, where a lot of the people that were even questioning Mark Zuckerberg were donors. Or used Facebook. So there was already a prior relationship there. Why no recusal?
Look, if you're a politician and you want to take on Google and Facebook, you know, that's going to take a tremendous amount of courage, because Facebook has shown, all of these platforms have shown, if they want to shut you off for being a Nazi, you can do that. So that same token, if you don't need to be a Nazi, you just need to be anti-Facebook. If you decide you want to do anything to regulate them or anything to, for example, take away their immunity under Section 230 that I mentioned, heck, that's taking on the dragon. So, you know, maybe we do have a politician or two who's got the cojones to do it. I doubt it. I mean, I haven't seen a single one of them that's had that. You know, maybe Maxine Waters will do it.
I doubt it. Matt, you were about to say something.
Yeah, I think that in Europe, they're trying to do some sort of an internet bill of rights. It'll probably go nowhere. But it's interesting, some of the ideas that they're trying to push through. One is that the algorithms, the weighting algorithms, should be public. Now, all know how if you put InfoWars in Google, the first five things that come up are, you know, derogatory slime against Alex Jones, et cetera. That's just how they work. But what we should at least get is some transparency about the algorithms. If everybody, for example, on Twitter or Facebook is weighted with a 1.0, and that if you're a bad comrade, you get progressively diminished to, say, a 0.5, a 0.4. Alex Jones show gets a 0.5. The show I'm trying to link to through YouTube gets a 0.5. You multiply these together, and we're getting like a 0.1, meaning we have no reach. Our power is nothing. But if you're a comrade, if you're a social justice warrior, you get a 1.5. All of your favorite websites get a 1.5. The same exact, you know, person making the same comments has, you know, 10 times the reach. So I at least would like to see that we can see the algorithms. How are they doing the waiting and the shadow banning and the throttling? You know, that would be a step. Because now, as long as they can control the levers, we're never going to be able to succeed at this.
Now, Mark, would that be something that they could do to give themselves legal cover if they said, all right, look, here is how we censor, or here's our algorithms. And then, you know, so if you want to complain, hey, you knew that when you signed up.
Oh, I don't think they need that. They already have legal cover. I mean, Google has had a couple of cases where people have sued because of how their search engine results are being gamed. Like Google finds people who are doing, for example, there was a company that was doing SEO optimization. Google doesn't want competition in that field. So what Google did is they de-indexed everything that this company had as far as in its SEO, in its website network that it was using for that.
And that brings us back to the debate. Is that antitrust. An antitrust thing, or does Google have the right to free speech to do that?
Well, it does have two courts so far that I'm aware of. There might be more, but so far there have been two trial court decisions that have said that Google's way of expressing its results are First Amendment protected. Now, I have a little bit of a problem with that because it's essentially giving a computer program First Amendment rights. And, you know, I'm not ready to give ourselves over to artificial intelligence having the same rights that I have. Maybe one day that'll be considered to be discrimination against the robots. But, you know,
yeah, you better watch out.
I say, you know, hey, you know, the hell with our new robot overlords. Let's, you know, meat should have rights, not machines. But, you know, when they don't really need that cover that you're talking about. They already have it. So, you know, the other way that it can be dealt with is maybe there are enough people that could create a competitor to Google that wouldn't do that. Google already have such deep tentacles into so many different areas that would it be almost impossible to compete with them? I mean, you're going to use DuckDuckGo? I mean, you know, I would encourage you.
I've used DuckDuckGo. There's another one, like Bing. ABC or something. Bing. Sure.
Bing, you know. I accidentally use Bing once Google. In a while.
Yeah, and you can see the difference in the search results when you use all the different SEOs. So, hey, we'll be right back. Matt Bracken, Mark Randazza is with me. We're going to talk more about the attacks on free speech and what we do philosophically moving forward to deal with it. We'll be right back. Segment here with Mark Randazza and Matt Bracken, and I'm going to give the floor real quick to Mark to make a statement. We're then going to get Matt's reaction to that, but I just first want to say this, and I've said this in the past, but I think we need to consider the philosophy of which we approach the law and justice, and I always ask this question. Are we a land of laws, or are we a land of justice? And to me, there is a big difference between the two. I believe the laws are in place in order to maintain justice, but there's certain cases and certain elements where sometimes the laws are not actually getting us justice, and we need to look at the case and say, you know what, let's actually look what is justice in this case instead of what is legal. That's my philosophy. Mark and Matt, feel free to respond to that. But I want to go to Mark for some final comments and then Matt. So you were saying, though, It's about a mental thing culturally where we all have to commit to free speech and say, hey, even though I disagree with you, let's at least agree that we have the right to speak whatever we want.
Yeah, and I think that is all important. If you lose sight of that, you lose sight of the idea of what America is. And, you know, I'm sure most of the people watching this show are either, you know, right-leaning or conservative-leaning. And where you should be most concerned about protecting free speech is with people you don't agree with. You know, when those idiots in Antifa want to say something, you should be instinctively protecting them. You know, a few weeks ago, there was a professor at Fresno State who said terrible things about Barbara Bush after she died, and people were calling for her to be fired because of it. Wrong. The right-thinking people who were, and there were a lot of conservatives to their credit who stood up for her free speech rights. And that's what you have to do. When you hear speech that you hate, when you hear speech that just makes you want to choke, that is the exact moment when your instincts should compel you to stand up to protect it, no matter how vile or no matter how awful it is. That's what this country's about. And if you lay that aside because your tribe doesn't like that speech, you're a traitor to the Constitution.
Matt Bracken.
Well, let me say about the Fresno professor. I wouldn't say call for her to be fired based on what she said, but I'm glad they record her, and I'm glad that it's being exposed, the depth of this, you know, 100-year Gramscian rot from within, to where the typical professor now might as well be an Antifa card-carrying communist, you know, America-hating. And so that doesn't mean fire her for what she said, but by all means expose how rotten, you know, how corrupt, how communistic, socialist, Aztlan promoting these professors.
But that's all free speech. That's an element of free speech. It's free speech. Something, you have the right to criticize what I say.
Yeah, and thank God for our founding fathers that they had the vision to put in the first two amendments, because in Australia, they had a mass shooting. There was no Second Amendment. Guns went away virtually, decent guns. Britain, you can now get put in jail for what you say on social media, basically Islamic blasphemy laws.
See, now this is a perfect example where some guy gets thrown in jail because he makes comments with his dog dressed as Hitler. Okay, maybe there's some
not
law.
Not even, just having him lift his
paw. Let's just say that there is some law, maybe he violates some law. Well, to me, that's not justice. That's what I'm saying. You got to think about justice here.
Well, we want to be careful because that's, you know, that idea can also be imported into, I mean, that's the argument I hear from people who don't like the First Amendment. They say, well, social justice requires that maybe we rethink freedom of expression. So
yeah, no way.
Maybe.
I didn't say social justice. Right,
justice, you know, equality might demand it. There are people who say, you know, that their humanity is not up for debate. Now, I understand how they feel, but I don't agree with them. No, even my humanity is up for debate. Everything's up for debate. That's our profound national commitment. When we break that commitment in the name of some other value, then we have broken the contract that we all made with each other, you know, during the revolution. That is the contract we have with one another since 1789. And we got to stick to it.
Now, you know, there's another form of censorship I'd like to touch on, which is a self-imposed circular firing squad censorship that I see quite a bit in conservative circles. This doesn't require the government imposing censorship. This isn't Google or YouTube. This is done by our own selves. I'd say probably, you know, the top 20 conservative websites are all neocon. 5 years ago, there was a big flap when Diana West put out a book called American Betrayal. She was viciously attacked by neocons, some of whom were former communists that were communists right until the Reagan era. Then they flipped and became millionaire neocons, you know, as using their, I used to be a communist, so believe me now, bona fides. More lately, we've seen over the Kanye West and Candace Owens flap. If you go on InfoWars today, you'll be deplatformed. You'll never get on Fox, with very few exceptions. I think Roger Stone being a notable exception. He's very rare that he
and
can
Anthony
transition.
Cumia. No. I just want to say you're 100% right. We're totally blacklisted, and the only people that I ever see that go on cross-platform is Cumia and Stone.
Right, and maybe I think has Tony Schaefer been on? Colonel Tony Schaefer.
Schaefer used to go on with Alex. I haven't seen him in a while. I don't know if there's anything to that though.
I trust my editors at CNN. They'll still let me write for him.
On Twitter.
We'll see.
You know, on Twitter, I'm followed and follow a lot of these guys, and they'll direct message me, okay? But they won't so much as put a like next to my name. They'll direct message me about something I wrote, but they won't retweet it or even in any way leave a fingerprint, because any association, you know, with an InfoWars kook army person means they could be blacklisted. They won't be published at Front Page Mag, American Thinker, PJ Media. We'll all blacklist them. Not to
mention.
Okay,
see, I want to now this is, I want to use this, and I want to take this conversation in a different direction here in the final 3 minutes, because Matt is now talking about the key issue that I wanted to get to. Defamation is almost an impossible win in this country.
And, oh, no.
And, well, I mean.
No, you can do it.
Okay, but here's what I'm saying. For our case, here's what we would have to say. Okay, they're censoring us here, so we're losing audience here. It's like, okay, we're losing X audience, so sure. We're losing X customers, so we're losing X dollars.
Yeah.
And as Bracken is just saying, so they dehumanize us and they demonize us. And then it's like, well, what are we supposed to do if they're doing this across all the platforms?
Look, let me tell you, let me give you we talked earlier about New York Times versus Sullivan, and that was the high watermark for freedom of expression. In New York Times versus Sullivan, the civil rights movement was marching across the South, creating a groundswell of support for equality. And the way that these people in the South who wanted to keep the old Jim Crow system intact, the way that they fought it, was they sued for defamation. It's exactly what these pricks are doing now. I mean, what they did is the sheriff's office in Alabama, in Montgomery, Alabama, sued the New York Times for defaming them because there was an ad in the New York Times that called them out for racist content, racist conduct. And it took a trip all the way to the Supreme Court to protect that. Now, that same book that Jim Crow was using then, that's what the Southern Poverty Law Center is doing right now. That's what all of these liberal groups are doing right now. They are taking a book right out of the Jim Crow law era in order to go after people that they politically disagree with. And shame on them for that.
Yeah,
them for that hard.
So, yeah, go ahead, Matt.
It's even more subtle and psychological than that. There we're talking about, you know, a liberal mega corporation, the New York Times versus some Southern group. I'm talking about conservatives using a hierarchical pecking order. I mean, I have more than 3,000 reviews, high ratings, 4.7 average stars, tons of comments, but I've never been reviewed by any of the flagship, you know, websites ever. I'm an unperson. I'm deprogrammed complete or delisted completely because they won't touch me with a barge pole. Because I write for Western Rifle Shooters Association, or I've been on InfoWars. So we need to try to crack this like conservative, internecine, competitive, hierarchical, you know, ladder climbing. Everybody is kissing everybody else's butt.
I'll just say I enjoy being the black sheep. I actually like being the black sheep in the media. I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. I'm glad that they blacklist us on all the mainstream news. I think it's I think that it's great, to be honest. But, I mean, final comments here, Mark. I mean, so here's a perfect example where, let's say, behind the scenes, you know, Fox News or somebody, just using them as an example, says, hey, if you associate with Bracken, you're not coming on. And so they intimidate all these people not to talk to Matt Bracken, and then it's something tough for him to sell a book. I mean, is there any legal defense for Matt?
No. Unfortunately, that is... you know, the First Amendment doesn't always bring you the result that you want. And, you know,
and that's why Matt is saying, hey, look, we need to be aware that this is happening in conservative news.
Sure. But, you know, just like if you look at I love every year they have Banned Book Week, for example. I mean, there's really no better way to bring attention to a publication than to try to ban it.
Yeah.
So I think, you know,
now they're trying to erase our documentaries, you know, off the internet, too. So it's the same thing. I like being the black sheep, but it is a serious issue. It is an attack on free speech. And we should all be pro-free speech. What happened to that? Matt Bracken, thank you. Mark Randazza, great stuff. We'll be right back.
My pleasure.
Welcome back to the War Room. Owen Schroyer here, about to be joined by Roger Stone. It is Richard Overton's 112th birthday today, the oldest living veteran. Here was a video that he recorded from 2015 giving Americans some advice.
Today marks marks the 70th anniversary of the end of World War II in Europe. May 8th is celebrated as the day when German troops throughout Europe finally laid down their arms. 16 million Americans served in World War II, and more than 400,000 lives were sacrificed in the name of freedom. They're hailed as the greatest generation. So we spoke to the oldest living World War II veteran. He lives right here in Austin, Texas. Richard Overton is going to be turning 109 years old on Monday. And we went out and we spoke with him. He's a really sweet man. And he offered up some tips for longevity, as well as his hopes and wishes for present-day America.
109.
109.
Trying to make 110. I think I'll make it.
Yeah.
I hope.
So do you think the world is better now or back then?
Oh, the world's a whole lot better, but there's some things are getting a little different. People are getting a little stronger. Getting a little meaner. They're shooting the police, and they're killing each other, and having fires every night. Now, that didn't happen when I was in the country. Mm. That wasn't happening, but none of it happening.
Well, what about during the civil rights era? Were you involved in that at all, and how was that here?
Well, back in the old days, a lot of us couldn't meet with each other, but only way a lot of them got together is when war started. That changed the situation, changed a lot of them. Because when you were left here and go to the army over the water, fighting for this country, well, you got to get together. You couldn't separate. Well, just think, all the soldiers that Uncle Sam had, and how in the world I can get to be the oldest. I can't believe that. Some didn't do it, did it? I don't think so. Sometimes I stop and look back and say, what in the world behind me? See what pushed me. See what kept me going.
Well, I read somewhere that you like coffee with whiskey in it.
It's good medicine. That's what I'm taking it for. My daddy taught me how to do that.
So what do you think about the Second Amendment? Do you think that's important for us nowadays, or do you think we should do away with the right to bear arms?
No, I think everything getting something. It was better here for a while, but it seemed like it's kind of changing a little bit.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't know whether it's the people changing. I don't guess God will change it. He don't go the bad way, he go the good way. But some of these things are getting pretty bad in places. And a lot of people coming over here and you don't know them, and they, like here a few days ago, some fella stopped out there with his hat down and wouldn't let me see him. And some fella stopped up there working on his car on the dash and wouldn't let me see him. Every time I look at him, they would drop their head. And there were some people that didn't belong here, but they found out that I've been in.
All right, the full video is on the Alex Jones channel from 2015 with Leanne McAdoo. The title is World's Oldest World War II Veteran Speaks Out. What a mountain of a man Richard Overton is. I mean, you can just see the experience. You can feel it. That is a mountain of a man right there. And this is why I'm doing the Veteran Call-In Show the last Friday of every month, starting this month. Last Friday of every month, the War Room is going to do a Veteran Call-In Show. 100% veterans. We hear about your issues, what you think needs to be done, what you think needs to be said. Your voice needs to be heard. We'll be right back with Roger Stone, who's on fire. Here's the deal. Roger Stone is so fired up right now, we can't even get him to sit down at his desk. Roger! Roger, calm down! Roger, we need you on air, Roger. Ladies and gentlemen, Roger is fired up. Roger, take it easy on that.
I apologize. I was collecting some late breaking news for our viewers.
All right, hey, you know what? Hey, Roger. I think we got some cell phone interference. Move your cell phone. I don't know what's going on. We got some sort of weird interference going on here. I think Roger's anger is permeating through the microphone now, like a magic beacon.
I'm not angry at all. I suspect that interference was caused by some kind of NSA surveillance.
Well, they want your communications now, Roger. They got to know everything you're saying. They want to know, you know, the dates and the times when you went to the bathroom. I mean, we got to know what Roger Stone is doing all the time.
Well, I was unfortunately in a conversation with the Washington Post reporter. As you may have seen, Owen, Sam Nunberg is the gift that keeps right on giving. The Senate Intelligence Committee has requested all correspondence between myself and Mr. Nunberg, specifically applying to Julian Assange, WikiLeaks, DC Leaks, and so on. None of this is troubling to me. But at the same time, the Washington Post is seeking to recycle the story that there is an email in which I boasted about the specific contents of the WikiLeaks disclosures. Now, I'm sorry to go through this old saw, but once again, a Washington Post reporter called me and said there were two sources, Nunberg one, a second unnamed source. And the unnamed source had an email, he implied the Washington Post had seen it, that showed that I knew in advance of the exact contents of the WikiLeaks disclosures. Both men said I flew to London and dined with Assange. Well, I thought we had disposed of that, but that is now the line of inquiry in the Senate matter. And very clearly is if through this story leaked about this email being put on the wall of the grand jury in Nunberg's questioning, I'm forced to re-answer the question yet again. Oh, you've heard of the cycle? This is the recycle. In the Washington Post story, this alleged email disappears. It's now ascribed as something I said in a phone call from the unnamed source. This is hearsay. Great newspapers like the Washington Post don't print hearsay. They usually require corroboration. But in this case, the corroborating alleged email, which does not exist, has evaporated from their coverage. So that is why I apologize for the delay, but they were on deadline, and I have to correct the fake news.
No, of course, Roger, and I know that. I mean, you're dealing with your legal defenses. I mean, your costs are racking up, and now they're trying to attack you more and get different angles.
I prefer to look at the week as a whole. I went toe-to-toe with Chris Cuomo on Monday. I had to take on Andrea Mitchell, who had a lot of false premises in her questions. I did Coast to Coast Radio. I did Todd Starnes at Fox Radio. I popped in here at InfoWars. I did a digital media tour one morning through one of the networks that I did 12 radio interviews and two radio TV interviews. I've been on with a lot of great serious hosts like the Wilkow Majority and Jim and Sam. I even went toe-to-toe with Karen Hunter, who I liked very much, but who has some misperceptions and disagreements with me. So it's been an amazing week. I'm very grateful for all those info warriors who went to the InfoWars site to buy my new book. Now, none of these media outlets, Owen, really want to talk to me about the book. Not really. They want to ask me about Julian Assange dining in London, that old saw, Guccifer 2.0. Oh, he's a Russian. I mean, it is a new tactic of the left to recycle everything. So I've been grateful for the opportunity to talk about my book. Now, very disappointingly, I was supposed to be on with Anderson Cooper last Wednesday, and then he decided to take the week off, and I had the option of being on with John Berman. And then a breaking news event did not allow that to happen. I was had planned to raise the question with Mr. Berman about CNN's efforts to keep the InfoWars, and specifically this show, The War Room, off of YouTube, off of the internet, and unfortunately that canceled. I was scheduled tomorrow for Mike Smirkanish's program, which would run on Saturday morning on CNN and be repeated on Sunday. Now, I like Smirkanish. He's an extraordinarily well-dressed guy. In fact, you, Owen, and he have something in common, being both on the best-dressed list. He's very articulate. He's very tough, but he's very fair. And he understands both law and politics. His interest was the book, and it would have been an epic program. But word has come from on high that I am to be canceled. So I won't have a chance to raise that question about why CNN, a news outlet, would be trying to censor another news outlet, InfoWars.com.
Well, Roger, I'll tell you what. Since you can't get a real, legitimate interview about your newest book, Stone's Rules, I'll go ahead and I'll do it for you. How about that, Roger? How about in the next segment, we'll do the real interview with Roger Stone about his book? Because I have noticed that people, a good interview is like a lost art. Like a real good interview that gets down deep and gets two people into a very intellectual conversation that's thought-provoking almost never happens anymore. So, Roger, we're gonna how about I do the real interview? I want to do the real interview with Alex Jones. Like, I want to do the real interview with Roger Stone. The real interview with Alex Jones.
I like that idea. And it's important to note, Coast to Coast was magnificent. Tom did a terrific job, and we had a good time. And we covered all kinds of areas, including exposing the left-wing conspiracy theory that is Russian collusion and the greatest single political scandal in our history, the use of the state apparatus to spy on the campaign of Donald Trump. So it was a great show. But I like the idea of you slicing and dicing the book because you've got a great eye for style. You are interested in the arts of politics, and you would be the perfect interrogator, in my opinion.
And I've actually read the book. Unlike I would doubt that Cuomo or many of the others that interviewed you have actually done. So we're going to do that on the other side. The real interview with Roger Stone on Stone's Rules. But look, I've been bad. I've been horrible. I haven't even plugged yet, and we're almost an hour and a half into the show. I kept the crew here late twice this week. So they're already working extended overtime hours, and I'm not even plugging. So, folks, please go to InfoWarsStore.com. Get Roger Stone's newest book, beautiful hard copy, Roger Stone's Rules, How to Win at Politics, Business, and Style. We're going to do the real interview with Roger Stone in the next segment. But there's other stuff there. Look, if you're not into the supplements, if you don't want to make yourself a walking target and wear an InfoWars short so some liberal will come up and hit you with a bike lock or something or pour coffee on you, I get it. We have household items. We make it easy for you to support us. The Super Blue fluoride-free toothpaste is on sale right now, 50% off. I was having a conversation with some of the crew on the other side, and they were talking about a toothache that they were having, and someone else was saying, yeah, I had a toothache too, and I used the colloidal silver spray, and the toothache over time went away. I'm not saying it may or may not have helped the issue, but they were saying how, hey, you got a toothache problem. Try the colloidal silver spray. It helped me. So this stuff works. It's 50% off right now at InfoWarsStore.com. There it is right now. Super Blue Complete Combo Pack, 50% off. But try the toothpaste. Try the shampoo. Try these household items. Everybody has shampoo and toothpaste. Why not shop with the good guys? So whatever shampoo you're using, whatever toothpaste you're using, that's your last batch of that because your next batch is at InfoWarsStore.com. Super Blue Fluoride-Free Toothpaste and Emmerich's Essentials All-Natural Herbal Shampoo. And check out the whole store while you're there. Ball caps, T-shirts, all kinds of great supplements. InfoWarsStore.com is what makes this possible and keeps us independent. The man is Roger Stone. His latest book is Stone's Rules, How to Win at Politics, Business, and Style, forwarded by Tucker Carlson, available at InfoWarsStore.com. Roger joins me now to discuss his new book. Now, Roger, the first thing I notice about your newest book, Stone's Rules, is that the structure and the readability is a lot different than your previous books, where this one is kind of more coffee table style, where you can jump in and out or do a quick jump to some point, and not as much of a novel or a front to back read. What made you decide to switch up the structure of your latest book?
Well, first of all, Owen, I want to thank you for having me here on your show, The War Room, and for conducting this incisive interview. I think that people will keep this book. I think they will mark it up. I think they will dog ear it. It's not a long polemic. It's a series of short rules and a brief discussion of their justification or application. And it's not a book that that is right or left, really. I mean, it certainly will appeal to Republicans and conservatives and libertarians and Trump supporters. But you don't have to be one of them to get something out of this book. You could be a Bernie Sanders progressive. You could be completely uninterested in politics, but interested in getting ahead in business or fashion or media. This is like an operating manual. These are my rules of the road, maxims and guidelines that I offer for others that have worked extraordinarily well for me.
Well, and the cool thing, too, is you take your experience from working in politics and names and places and dates, and you kind of apply the rule to that situation. And like you said, it's not left or right. You actually use all different examples, all different politicians. I mean, even Bill Clinton tactics are spoken of in this book. So you really kind of take your experience and then your firsthand knowledge of how to apply these rules and how other people have used them to become successful.
Well, look, politics ain't beanbag. This is a contact sport in America, always has been. And I'm a warrior, no question. And I've got the scars to prove it. Now, there's a lot of, I would use the name of that congressman in a crude parody, but I don't want to get reported to the FCC, so I won't. There's a lot of disinformation out there of the shifty, you know, unreliable type about this entire matter, and it has to be addressed, in my opinion.
What do you think was the most fun subject material in this book? Is it your guidance on style? Is it your guidance on how to make a first impression? Is it your guidance on how to get noticed? What was the most fun part of this book for you to write?
I tried to fuse a lot of style observations. For example, every gentleman should own a raincoat, but if you buy a raincoat, buy a light-colored or tan one. Black raincoats make one look like they stepped out of Goodfellas. It's not a great look. That's just one example. I give you advice on the size and shape of cufflinks, how to tie your own bow tie, why you shouldn't dry clean your suits, how many inches wide your cuff should be, monograms, minimal, never on the cuff. But at the same time, you can learn about automobiles, food, my mother's recipe for marinade, also known as Sunday gravy, the proper mixture for Dick Nixon's secret, no longer martini recipe, which is a killer, passed down to him from Winston Churchill. I actually had a Newsweek reporter come over for an interview, and we shook up a martini Nixon style. So it's a great compendium for anybody who wants to succeed. It's not just about how you dress, although that is certainly a key part of it. If a person came to you for a job interview and they were unshaven, unkempt, they smelled, their fingernails and were dirty, their shoes were scuffed, would you hire them? Of course not.
Well, and I think this book is Roger Stone, the character, Roger Stone, the personality, not Roger Stone, the political genius, not Roger Stone, the political operative, but instead more of a personal touch where people can kind of get to know you as a person instead of your politics.
Well, as I have said many times, when people ask me about things I've said in the past, don't confuse me with the Roger Stone I sometimes play. Or is that rule only reserved for the host of The Tonight Show? So, no, look, as I have said many times and say in this book, the only thing in politics worse than being wrong is being boring. Why is Alex Jones such an extraordinary success, particularly given all the obstacles the tech left and the globalists and Soros try to put in his way? Because he's interesting, because he's engaging, because you can tell it comes from the heart. And the people recognize politics these days, Owen, as a form of entertainment. And if you aren't provocative, if you don't entertain them, they start looking at your opponent. Perhaps he or she will entertain them. So there, a lot of this is, without question, theater, but that's why.
Is this the type of direction you want to take your writing style in, more of a generic approach to life instead of an approach to politics or a political book that reads from front to back?
Not necessarily. I am working on another book which has been parodied and the truth about which has been distorted extensively, analyzing on the tragic death of John F. Kennedy Jr. And I'm trying to assemble extraordinary research, which at this point has convinced me that I can make a comprehensive case that his accident in which he was killed may not have been an accident. And then I work on who would have had such a motive. I don't have stone cold proof of who might do this, but I have several theories and I can kind of I identify them as such. So that book is in the offing. I have a coffee table picture book in the works, which is a look at how Richard Nixon's imagery has shaped the culture from the 40s to today. The ski jump nose, the jowls, the exaggerating speaking, and it's a compendium of art mostly. Both Nixon campaign items, but also anti-war items, anti-Nixon items from head shops and the anti-war movement. But just an examination of how this crosses the pop culture as either a beloved figure or a hated figure for 40 years. A man who's on the ticket in six national elections for either president or vice president, an extraordinary record.
Well, there's self-help books, there's motivational books, then there's Stone's Rules. That's the book you want if you're an up-and-comer, a young guy who wants a little motivation, wants a little guide. This is the book for you because it comes lighthearted, it comes with fun. You're going to enjoy reading this. You're not going to really feel pressure when you read this, like, oh, am I doing it right? This is fun. Roger, what do you think is the number one rule for a young up-and-comer that you would tell them right now?
I guess that's this one. Never quit. I mean, life is like a prize fight. It's 12 rounds. No matter how dismal or behind you may be, never quit. Persevere. If the first campaign you run doesn't succeed, run another one, and then run another one.
The left promises to launch a communist revolution. We promise to stand in their way. This is The War Room with Owen Schroyer and Roger Stone. Watch the live stream at Infowars.com/show.
It's the real Roger Stone interview that the mainstream news won't give you on his latest book, Stone's Rules. Now, I got to tell you, if you're an up-and-comer and you want a little advice on how to improve your wardrobe, improve your style, this is the book for you. Are you trying to make your way up at a company or a job or in a social circle and you're trying to get some positive attention? You're trying to do something to be impactful? This is the book for you. And the great thing about it, it's an easy read. It's very well laid out, so you can reference the rules and get to the pages really quickly if you need to re-reference some of them. How to dress, how to approach politics, how to approach day-to-day style. It's all in Stone's Rules, how to win at politics, business, and style at InfoWarsStore.com. Roger, you can really tell that you had some fun writing this book when you read some of the rules in here. Like, for example, the higher up you get on the flagpole, the more people can see your ass. And it's little anecdotes like that that'll give you a chuckle every once in a while. But what do you think motivated you most to do this? Was it because you wanted to give people advice on style, give people advice on how to approach day to day, just give people advice on how to approach media or get noticed? I mean, what was your biggest motivational factor?
Well, what happened here is that Stone's rules have always existed in one place, just in my mind. And talking to reporters or associates, I would cite a rule. I'd say, Stone's rule, don't order fish in a steakhouse, for example. Or Stone's rule, always praise them before you hit them. Or any other number of them. And then Matt Labash, who is one of the finest writers in the country, somewhat shady in the way he tries to suck up to you, but wrote an extraordinary piece called Political Animal for the Weekly Standard. And in that article, in several places, it mentioned Stone's rules and the fact that I spout them off. I just cite them. And then Jeff Toobin, I guess of The New Yorker and CNN now, wrote a piece that was some journalists thought was a knockoff of Labash's piece, but it also referenced the now iconic becoming Stone's rules. And there it stayed until Netflix produced their extraordinary documentary, which has made me not a farthing, not a penny, because it is not mine, it is theirs. But it also, get me Roger Stone, also referenced these rules. Mike Smirkanish of CNN and Tucker Carlson, now of Fox, both good friends. Smirkanish sometimes aggravates me. He's so damn smart. And Tucker Carlson is a man of enormous courage and personal style. Both urged me to get with it, Stone. Finish this. Put it out for posterity and the ages. Impart to an entire generation of young people, young libertarians, young conservatives, maybe, maybe not, anybody who wants to understand, you know, some of my observations about life. I've been through an awful lot. I've had a wild ride in 40 years in American politics, sometimes at the fringes, sometimes now in the mainstream. I like to feel like I've had an impact and tell other people how they can do the same thing.
Now, a lot of advice in this book is actually style related, basic stuff, how to build a wardrobe, how to decide what suit to wear, never wear the same suit twice in a row, different stuff like that. What got you so interested in style? How come you became so enamored with style and you wanted to impart your knowledge of this to other people?
Because it's more than just putting on clothing. It's how you present yourself to the world. And it helps determine whether you're going to succeed at what you're doing. Look good, feel good is one of my rules. It has a beneficial effect of a greater sense of well-being. The well-dressed man is a confident man, but it's also how others perceive you. No one wants to associate or do business with people who are slovenly. So there is that. But it also, at the same time, has a lot to do with a kind of a desire to create your own style. In other words, you can break the rules once you know what the rules are. Owen, you're an example of a guy who's created his own style. And it's gotten you recognized in a nationally organized international best dressed observation. It's Stone on Style. So I guess it's for men who are trying to forge a personal style as well.
And again, you can easily go and reference some of these guys. Give me a document cam here so I can the audience can see what I'm talking about here. In the book, the index has all the rules listed out, has all of them sectioned out too. So you can easily go back and reference some of this stuff. If there was something in there that really stuck out to you that you wanted to go back, or there was some advice that Roger Stone talks about on style that you want to go back, you can go back and look at it via the index, which is very well laid out. So I think you've done a great job here, Roger. I think that you're right. This book has staying power, where this is the kind of book that you lay out because it's an easy read. You can just pick it up and put it back down and pick it back up at any time and place. or you can go reference, I just pulled Dick Nixon's Silver Bullet Martini recipe. There's the ingredients. There's the assembly. Boom, right there. You can go back and reference it and make the same drink that Dick Nixon used to drink. So it's those kind of antidotes, and it jumps everywhere. It really, I think, Roger, I think you really enjoyed this because it was perhaps your first opportunity to take all of your political experience and not just apply it to one political idea or agenda, but instead just put it out there into the ether for everyone to soak up.
Well, and I'll tell you what's disturbing, Owen, and that is when I go to promote my book on the internet, because the Washington Post and the New York Times will not be reviewing this book, and I take the buy link from InfoWars Store or Amazon or Barnes & Noble, and then I take it to Google Shortener, and then I place it in a promoted post on Facebook, you know, with a little advertising kind of copy to tell you Stone's Rules is here and here's why you should buy it. Well, within minutes, Google classifies my link as spam, but it doesn't really matter because Facebook rejects my ad, even though it doesn't violate any of their guidelines. This is the secret strategy being applied to InfoWars and Roger Stone and Stone Cold Truth in and StoneZone.com, where they are attempting to manipulate our algorithms and use other technology to limit our reach and our ability to communicate. It is exactly what InfoWars is facing. They go out and they file a bunch of frivolous but defamatory lawsuits to garner the headlines. Then they turn around and say, here's why Alex Jones, InfoWars, Roger Stone should be banned. It's insidious. And that's why we really need your help. Now, something we haven't done for long, but you can go to the InfoWars.com store and find the button to donate. If you're not in the market for Stone's Rules or any of our other great nutraceuticals, if you're not looking for a T-shirt this week, we show you right there that you can give us a generous contribution, knowing that Alex Jones is not pulling a giant paycheck here, folks. He takes every penny and he puts it back into the expansion and, unfortunately, our bills, fighting back the globalist jackals who are suing us. It is extraordinary. And after you've given at InfoWars, if you got an extra buck or two, the StoneDefenseFund.com. I am plagued by both fake news, frivolous lawsuits, and now Senate investigations into non-existent Russian collusion. But be generous, folks. We need your support at InfoWars. I need your support. We're on the War Room. I'll be right back.
Stone is not just a best-selling author, but he's also very in the know when it comes to White House intrigue and DC developments, where there are some going on right now. Let me just throw some of these out here, and then Roger Stone can pick which ones he wants to pick apart. Ex-FBI Director James Comey compares Trump to a mafia boss at a talk in Toronto. So he's taking his book tour to Toronto now. I guess he's been so rebuked in America, he has to flee to Canada. This is from ABC News, go figure. Mueller probing donations with foreign connections to Trump inaugurations. So this is just, you know, it's really fake news. In fact, let's go ahead and... They just print these stories to act like the Mueller probe is still legitimate. It's totally, totally fake. Everybody knows it. But here you go again, NBC News. So this is how it works. They put out all the mainstream globalist press to prop up the Mueller probe, even though it's dead. Lawmakers weigh plan B to protect Mueller's work. Mueller's work. Give me a break. Then you've got the developments out of the Washington Journal, a breaking story by Kimberly Strassel. FBI mole inside the Trump campaign. So you've got all that going on. Then you've got the numbers being crunched. CNN and MSNBC give Stormy Daniels $175 million in free advertising wow, she really outsmarted them. But Roger, you're being attacked. So I'll give you a chance to correct the record here from the CNN story. Senate Intelligence Panel seeking Sam Nunberg communications with Roger Stone. Apparently these people are so bored, Roger, they just want to read your texts.
Either that or they hadn't been watching the War Room, where we've addressed this ad nauseum. Obviously, I did not dine in London with Julian Assange. That's the subject of what they're seeking to prove. I think we have addressed this. Let's go to your list. But a little insight here regarding Rudy Giuliani, who has mounted a very vigorous attack on the legitimacy of the special counsel. Now, many people told me that Rudy's a man who I have a lot of respect for because of his toughness. We have disagreements, but right now the president needs a tough guy. His lawyers previous to this were both marshmallows and lawyers. They need a lawyer who understands politics. Rudy Giuliani does. And in the broader question of questioning the legitimacy of this probe, the tactics that they are using, the extra constitutional authority, the effort by Jeff Sessions to hide what they are doing, the use of politicized and politically motivated FISA warrants to spy on associates of Donald Trump. This is extraordinary, and I think Rudy was very effective on the attack. On the question of Stormy Daniels, Michael Cohen, and so on, in all honesty, I found the mayor's presentation a little confusing. I still don't have enough of a grasp on the facts, but Rudy seemed to be making the case that even if the president did have a consensual relationship with this woman, and even if he did agree to reimburse Cohen, he probably would have done that, or he would have done that, whether he ran for president or not, to avert public embarrassment. Therefore, it would not be a political contribution. I think that's what the mayor was arguing. I think he was less effective on this. But the mainstream media has now launched an all-out Get Rudy crusade, spreading rumors about heavy drinking and mental instability. This tells me that we've got to hold on to Rudy. If they think it is so urgent that they get him outside the president's circle, I think it's indicative that they fear his courage. This is a guy who gave perhaps the best, most rousing speech of the convention and ripped bare the dangers of Islamic terrorism and the qualities of Donald Trump. So keep your eye peeled for this fake news assault on probably the greatest mayor New York ever had, Rudy Giuliani.
Well, Roger, I want to kind of stick to this for a second, because I do think there's fair criticism for some of Giuliani's tactics. Specifically, it seems like he goes on the news and says stuff about whatever Trump did to pay people off or may have done or may not have done. He gets a lot of flack for that. But it seems to me, and this is where I want to get your take from your expertise, it seems to me like Giuliani is kind of running a flash bang campaign, if you will, or a distract then attack campaign, where he kind of goes out over here and puts out a shiny ball and, ooh, everybody look at the shiny ball. And then really he's actually up to something else over here that's actually freaking them out. Do you think that's accurate?
Well, I think he's got to play catch up ball because his predecessors were saying and doing nothing other than assuring the president that they would have a letter from the special counsel clearing him by Christmas. And then it was New Year's. And then it was at the end of January. And now we're going into May, and there is and will never be such letter. What we have is a determined extrajudicial rogue effort to remove a duly elected president of the United States by any means necessary, to hurt his associates and their families, to invent and fabricate crimes where there are none, to look into every aspect of one's life, not just an area limited by a special counsel law. Rod Rosenstein is violating the law. He has a fundamental conflict in his relationship with Mueller. He cannot oversee him. He's also complicit in Uranium One, which is why he's so desperate to hold this rogue operation to take down Trump and his associates in place.
What do you make of the Wall Street Journal report from Kimberly Strassel talking about the FBI mole inside the Trump campaign? What do you make of that? And do you believe that that was something that extended beyond the campaign?
Jack Posobiec, who's an intrepid reporter with One America, friend of this show, friend of InfoWars, is reporting that the source is alleged to be Steph Halper. Now, I know Steph Halper. I've played poker with him also. He's kind of a fish at the poker table, in all honesty. But he is a son-in-law of Ray Klein, a legendary neocon under the Bushes, one of the architects of their foreign adventurism, deeply burrowed into the deep state, served in the Reagan administration, a hardcore neocon, and very wily and very smart. So if he was indeed the mole, if he was saying he was for Donald Trump, first of all, that would be suspect. But he is purported to be the individual referred to in this story.
Well, and now it just adds another element, another layer of the spying, of the illegal gathering of information, and the undermining of a deep state trying to take Trump down, where I would fathom that this was not an isolated event. They probably still had moles in the Trump team even after the inauguration, may even still to this day. And that's how you get certain leaks, like the leak about Gina Haspel and all the documents that they reviewed. Well, that was only reviewed by people inside, so somebody had to leak that to the Washington Post for them to write that story about Gina Haspel. So, I mean, do you think that this is still a pressing issue that President Trump needs to think about?
Well, I think they will go to any ounds. Remember, I just got a phone call saying that before the grand jury, Sam Nunberg was shown a blow-up of a Roger Stone email. Question, how would the government obtain my emails? I didn't submit to any kind of document request. Well, the answer most likely is an illegal FISA warrant, as reported by the New York Times on January 20th, 2017. The government denies in Paul Manafort's case that he was ever under surveillance. Yet in the next breath that they say they have transcripts and excerpts of transcripts with Russian nationals. Which is it? He's entitled to that. So with Sessions blocking information, with their refusal to let there be a fair examination of their surveillance of their targets, they're hiding their rogue unconstitutional actions.
Well, that's actually so key, and that's why Devin Nunes is saying if Sessions doesn't start to cooperate with the questions that we have about this probe, they're going to move to impeach him because he is holding a lot of this information close to the chest, and it's hard for these Senate panel committees to figure out what the hell's going on because they keep getting blocked by the Sessions DOJ.
Well, and I must tell you, Owen, I am trying to cooperate with both the Senate Intelligence and the Senate Judiciary Committees. And I'm happy to go in there, as I did in front of the House Intelligence Committee, where I testified truthfully and completely and explained to them the disinformation that they may think is true regarding WikiLeaks, Guccifer 2.0, Nunberg, and anything else they'd like to talk about. But their document request is so broad that if I send the documents via a hard copy rather than
the scientist at
trigger warning. This broadcast contains subject matter that may offend liberal snowflakes. It's the War Room with Owen Schroyer. Watch the live stream at Infowars.com/show.
So Vice thought it would be cool to embed themselves in an Antifa encampment, if we could even call it that. And they filed a report. R. Harrison Smith decided to report on that and show you the real angles. Here is that report.
Yes, Vice News, that paragon of journalistic integrity. Well, they've taken off time from telling us why haircuts are racist to spend some time embedded with the enemy. That's right, they did an extended expose on Antifa. They spent a weekend with them camping in the woods, hiding like rats in the shadows, just outside of an event that they were protesting. In late April, anti-fascist activists camped in the woods of rural Tennessee the night before the American Renaissance Conference. They hoped to get the conference canceled or at least make it unpleasant for attendees. For some, it did not matter if the tactics they used were unethical. Now that is the keystone of the Antifa movement, and it's elaborated on here. Naya, one of the activists, terrorists, you could say, admitted it was possible that there were people among the anti-fascists who were there to do violence for the sake of violence. How do they weed them out? We don't. He does not worry that this could mean that the movement was morally compromised. Well, in order to be morally compromised, you have to have a moral basis to begin with, or else there's nothing to compromise, and clearly they don't have one of those. No, these people are literally hiding in the shadows outside of an event that they don't like, planning to use violence to bring it down.
Are you ever concerned that, like, even if these methods work, they might be unethical?
I'm okay with that.
Quote the article, the brutality of these particular activists' physical violence contrasts with the sophistication of their intelligence gathering. So that was a big part of this, was that they have a very sophisticated online presence that gets all sorts of valuable information. How do they do it, and what information do they glean?
Pretending to be a girl.
Pretending to be a girl. That's right, they just make fake avatars and go on the chat rooms and the websites of their perceived enemies, and they ask those people, hey, what are you doing, and can I join? And those people say, sure, come here and join us here. And that is the extent of their intelligence gathering.
How do I be a part? Where do I go? That's how we find out what they're planning, where they're gonna be, and how they're doing it. Using their misogyny against them.
Yeah, that's they can't, so interesting.
I think you'll find that on the internet, pretending to be a girl or just being a girl is, people are going to be more willing to help you no matter what. And the fact that you see a group of people who are eager to find women to join their movement is somehow a sign of misogyny, that goes over my head. You'll have to explain the deep-seated communism that allows you to believe such things.
Yeah, that's so interesting.
But if you even just look at how they're touting this group's intelligence gathering versus the actual intelligence gathering capabilities of their perceived enemies, which would be like Trump supporters or just trolls on 4chan, that sort of thing, the difference is staggering. One side discovers where a large group is holding their not-secret conference. The other side will just take a image of a flag with a blue sky in the background, and they'll triangulate using jet streams. They'll listen to the wildlife. They'll look at the constellations and are able to pinpoint exactly where the camera is.
Uh-oh. All right. Well, we just got hacked by Antifa here. They shut us down. So somehow heterosexuality is misogyny now. Wow. Yeah, I guess that's what you do when you fail every time at trying to court a woman. I guess you just say the successful men that get girlfriends and get married, I guess they're just all misogynists. That's how that works. Well, hey, look, the full video is on the Alex Jones channel. There's plenty more to that report, so go to the Alex Jones YouTube channel to find that. On the other side, I am joined by Austin Fletcher of Fleckus Talks. He goes into the Antifa encampments as well, but he doesn't really take the Vice angle. That was kind of strange. A bunch of vagrants just kind of hanging out in the woods before some riot or protest. It's kind of actually sad, really, that they can't even like go to an establishment for this. It's just weird. Here's a short story. I go to a Trump protest. I take a camera and a microphone, and I give the Trump detractors a platform the likes of which they would never have. Now, while you think being so passionate and outspoken about their anti-Trump cause and their hatred, they would want to take up that platform, voice their opinion to show the world the real issues, at least in their hearts and minds. And either they back down, don't want to comment, curse, spit, or even swing at you, or you get the footage like Fleckus Talks gets, and they really expose themselves as the biggest dumbasses in America. Now, there's fringe elements on the right, there's fringe elements on the left. However, the big difference is you can go and expose the fringe of the left for who they really are just by taking their response and saying, wow, that didn't make any sense. They don't even know what they're doing out here. Where the fringe elements of the right, you may think they're fringe, but at least they can speak. At least they can tell you what they're thinking. So Fleckus Talks, Austin Fletcher joins me now. It really is incredible. Here we are. And a year and a half into the Russia probe, you can still go out on the streets of California and ask people what they think about Trump Russia, and they still all buy it. I mean, this is incredible to me. You go face the brainwashing eye to eye, and it's still there. I mean, at what point is it like a shock that they're still doing this? Like, when does that become the story?
It's a great point. I think it's, credit to the left in a way. They've done a great job over the last few years indoctrinating our schools, indoctrinating the students in our schools at every level, especially through the universities. They've done a great job of, you know, making people have super short attention spans and not be able to watch anything, you know, more than a minute long with any depth to it. So there's a lot of aspects that have come, you know, a lot of fruits of labor that have been years in the works here. And now we're seeing it. And now, like, you know, I feel like with Kanye West, especially recently, the first shot's been fired. And now that's our enemy. And that's who we're up against. It's these perfectly engineered, leftist, brainwashed, manipulatable, educated, useful idiots.
Well, speaking of fruits of labor, you're starting to get some fruits of your labor. Your channel's more popular than ever. You're kind of even going, I mean, mainstream media outlets pick up your powerful videos. Now you even got a bit of a crew. You've got people that go out and they do the same thing that you do with the spoon, and they kind of have their own spin on it. I mean, that's kind of cool for you to see that other people are kind of coming out to help your cause and add to your content.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been really great. A big push I've had with my content has always been that you don't need to be in a big expensive studio to do this. You don't, you don't need an education in journalism. You don't need a suit or a nice outfit. You can just go out in the street with a spoon microphone and ask people some questions and you'll get the story. So that's always been a push from day one. And it was really cool to see a lot of people, especially young people, a lot of high school kids, going to their walkouts, going to their local protests and asking some really basic questions, and they themselves open to a debate. And the way it works out most of the times is once you ask a few questions that go beyond the surface level, most people buckle. So it's really good to see the right out there doing it. And I think if we continue to do that, people in the middle will start to maybe change their opinions and choose a different side.
You've kind of added to your repertoire, if you will, this new element where you get people to cold read facts and you kind of come at it from a neutral perspective, which you always do, which is really beautiful to what the artwork, honestly, that you put out is that you come from a neutral perspective, at least when you approach these people. So you do this thing now and you get them to read a PSA. It's like a cold read and they just sit down. Now, in the last one, you did the stats about feminism. Now, it looks like most of the people that came in and read it were kind of hesitant when they read some of these facts and then kind of even backed off of that. Talk about that experience when you brought the people in to read the facts about feminism and then they read some of them and they were kind of perturbed and it almost seemed like they didn't even want to continue the reading.
Yeah, it definitely was the case. We had about six people come in and I'd say half were pretty much not uncomfortable, but they were unsure, and it really was just, crashing their reality. And the other people, to their credit, they were really open to it and said, wow, I didn't realize these numbers were what they were. This is really interesting. It, you know, changes the whole narrative. And they were really cool and open to, you know, new ideas. But we did see the strong, you know, brainwash people on the left in a bunch of cases. And even when the facts are given to them straight in the face and they're literally saying it themselves, they still revert back to, you know, I don't know, this isn't right, I don't agree. And, you know, more and more experiences like this will have people change their minds.
Yeah, I mean, what is that like where they kind of have like an awakening moment right there in front of your film crew, but then they want to reject it? So like they have the awakening, like, whoa, here's the facts going into my brain. And then they're like, no, I have to reject the facts. I have to stick to what I believe in.
Yeah, exactly. They have this idea that, you know, facts go both ways, and they really don't. And the people who do try to convince you of that, you know, most times have, you know, is the left. They really do try to manipulate facts and, you know, conflate facts and emotions. So once the, you know, once they get hit with a few facts and they have no choice but to read it, I think part of it when it comes to their reactions is the fact that they now realize they're in maybe a right-leaning YouTube video. So it kind of crashes their reality, but also it's like, oh no, I'm in.
They realize that they're in the, so it's like their realization that they just had the gotcha moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that gotcha moment is, you know, way more intense, especially when they signed the papers before basically giving us rights to all the video we shoot and they know exactly what they're getting into. So there's a multiple gotcha moments on multiple levels with this. But I think the end result was cool. I think a lot of people appreciated it from both sides, which has always been the goal.
Well, the end result was great. And again, this is a new element of Fleckus Talks outside of the street interviews that made you so popular. You've added this new element of doing the cold reads and bringing people in to do this stuff. And then you kind of have a new level of rejection where you're not on the streets trying to talk to people face to face. Now people are dealing with it themselves and they're just reading a fact instead of having you maybe bring it to their attention. They're reading it. So it's like a different, it's like a different realization. It's like a different thing to witness in real time, them rejecting the facts coming out of their own lips.
Yeah, exactly. It was a good transition. The old videos were, you know, them saying it and them being sure about it. And now, yeah, I've kind of switched it a little bit and flopped the table. And now they're reading facts for the first time. So I think, you know, it was a great project. I actually had one more written, which was going to be facts about Islam. And to be honest, it was just so brutal that it would have deleted every platform I put it on. It would have deleted my Instagram, my YouTube. It would have been career ending for me. So I had to hold back on the facts about Islam project.
Well, I mean, you know, it'd be a shame if you did that video anyway, and then you just put it on some other channel, you know, and it just ended up on some other channel that, you know, didn't get banned, or if it did get banned, it wouldn't affect all your other work. I mean, you know, that's just something that could happen. But I think you would actually probably have a worse response from that, because people, the whole political correct nature, just you don't say anything bad about Islam.
Oh, 100%. I actually have it all written out. And if people, they wouldn't get past fact number one, they wouldn't even continue to read it. So I decided not to put it out there. We would have had a ton of negative reactions, a ton of follow-up calls trying to, you know, take the video down. So it wasn't even worth the hassle, but there are some interesting facts there that should get out there.
Well, you know, maybe it is worth the hassle, because that's the kind of stuff that goes viral when they try to shut it down. So that's that, but you know it. The problem is you wouldn't be able to get them to finish reading it. Like you said, they'd start to read it and then they shut down and be like, oh no, I'm too politically correct for this. I'm PC, bro. All right, another segment with Austin Fletcher of Fleckus Talks. This is The War Room. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to The War Room, presented by Infowars.com. I'm your host, Owen Schroyer. Austin Fletcher of Fleckus Talks joins me now. Let's advance to some other subjects of discussion here, Austin. Let's discuss a story that I found. Well, it's not really a story. It's a tweet that went viral. It's a young girl. Her account is at Chan the World, and it's a black girl. And she had some tire trouble on the highway with her father, and a gentleman wearing a Confederate flag shirt with a Confederate flag tattoo with Confederate flag car stickers came up and helped them get their tire back up, fix the tire and get the car back up and running and on the street. And so she tweets out, "So my dad's tire blew up on the freeway, and this dude with a Confederate flag tattoo wearing a Confederate flag t-shirt with a Confederate flag car stickers stopped and changed our tire. My mind is blown. Don't judge a book by its cover, y'all." And this went viral, and I think it's something that I wish more people could become in tune with, that we are all Americans, and even though we have differences, whether that be what we wear, what we think, what we say, at the end of the day, we need to come together. We need to realize that we're in this together. I'm just wondering, is this the type of viral message that can get out? I mean, is there any hope, do you think, or is it too late? Has the divide become so expansive that it's almost impossible for people to come together?
The divide is definitely expansive, but I think moments like this and stories like this are perfect because it circumvents the mainstream media. It's a natural, organic tweet from a non-verified account, just a normal person having an experience, put it out there, and it goes viral. So I think that stuff is awesome, and I think we do need to see more things like that. It does kind of worry me with echo chambers, though, because I do have a feeling like probably only the right saw that message, and the left probably did. That didn't really go across people's timelines. But I do think, yeah, we are pretty divided right now. But I think the right is more than ever willing to talk and wanting to come to the table. And we're seeing it with people like Kanye and, you know, everything that's out there for conservatives to consume. All the, you know, the alternative media is always open to discussion and wanting to bring the country together for the betterment of the country. I think what we're seeing on the left right now kind of falls into the opposite, where they're trying to tear it down and we're doing our best to hold it up. So I think more stories like this would be great, but I do think it is going to be more of a battle than just tweets and stuff.
Well, I love how you put that. It's circumventing the mainstream media. That's exactly it. Where this story only happens organically and it has to be pushed organically through a grassroots media push, essentially, where a story like this, you know, this girl's never going to get interviewed by CNN or anything like that. And I'm not saying that that should happen. It's just, that's the point, is that so many people, if it doesn't come from their television, right, that's the authority, then it doesn't exist and it's not out there. And so this is the only type of way we can circumvent that. You know, it's amazing. Where is the left wing Fleckus talks? You know, I mean, I might be a little bit more aggressive when I go do my street interviews than yourself. I won't deny that. But where is anybody from the left wing that goes to right wing events and asks for our opinion and gives us a platform and puts a microphone in our face to challenge our ideas? It just doesn't exist. I mean, are you aware of any?
I would say the closest thing maybe would be like Jimmy Kimmel's, you know, questions on the street, or, you know, the John Oliver type shows. Like, those are the other people that are kind of doing their political commentary, but nothing at the grassroots level. Nothing, you know, just people going out on their own with a phone camera and making it happen. And what you said before is absolutely right. Like, the division is strong. And I feel like a few years ago, especially with families, you know, especially at the holidays and stuff with families, politics was sometimes polarizing, but people kind of agreed to disagree, or maybe would get into some arguments, but everyone, you know, at the end of the night went home happy. Now it's so divisive that I know stories that are of families splitting apart that are just like, you know, they can't see each other because they're divided over politics. So the stakes have definitely been raised in the last few years, and politics and entertainment and culture and everything we consume has basically merged into one. And politics now more than ever is like a centerpiece in what people consume. And reality TV is basically, you know, shows like CNN. So that's kind of what we're dealing with now. Politics has overtaken the culture in a way. And I think it's a great thing, because now we have to pay attention. And when you do actually learn what's really going on, I think people tend to lean towards conservatism.
Well, let's bear down on that. Why would it become so extreme that a family, like, I mean, my family, we argue about politics like cats and dogs. I mean, we love it, though. And at the end of the day, we all sleep and we wake up the next day and we have a good laugh and, you know, we have breakfast and share orange juice and everything. But why would now, and I think that's how most families are, but now, like you said, why does it reach this level of extremism where it's so toxic that they don't even have that element anymore, where they can just put it aside and say, hey, we may disagree, but we're family, you know, let's still break bread? I think that the answer is because of what they've done to Donald Trump. They've made Trump out to be Hitler. They've made Trump out to be the worst man ever. He's racist. He's a bigot. He hates women. He hates Muslim. He hates black people. He hates Hispanic people. He's Hitler. He wants to kill everybody. He's going to start world war. So they have this total false image of Trump in their head that's all fake. And so then as soon as you're like, hey, I like Trump, I support Trump, it's now so toxic that they're so committed to it because of their own, what's the word? I don't want to say virtue, but because of their own, I can't think of the word right now, but I guess conscious is so committed that Trump is the worst person on earth. They can't break bread with you anymore. They can't come to a middle ground with you anymore because, oh my gosh, you like Trump and he is the worst thing in the history of earth.
Exactly. And there's no room for debate anymore because once you try to defend Donald Trump or bring up a positive point for him, you're defending a racist, Nazi, homophobe, transphobe. So like the conversation ends there. Like that's not worth their time. They don't engage with people who have those views.
Which and we see that in the street interviews. That's what we see.
Exactly. Once you ask, you know, one question beyond the surface level of what are you doing here, it becomes, you know, oh, you're with them. I don't want to talk to you. And I think it's a combination of those things that you mentioned. It's the media just reiterating night after night all over the echo chambers, just hammering it home. And when you don't see opposing views in your online echo chambers, when you do meet someone from a different background or a different point of view, it kind of blows your mind and you can't understand. And you think, oh, that's the enemy that's, you know, been described to me. And it just comes from years and years of, I think a lot of these people who are brainwashed, they're entitled. They are educated, but they don't know anything. A lot of them are in debt and kind of in disenfranchised, and their entitlement makes them think they deserve more. And it makes them like the perfect people for a resistance. They think they're entitled to more. They think America is better than what it is. And they think they know what's best for America. So they think it's on them to, you know, promote their values and their right and they're oppressed and we're the oppressors. So it really creates an environment where we have a group of people who are convinced they're oppressed and they're trying to stop racism and Nazis in the United States. And we have a group of people, according to them, who are the opposite, who are the racist Nazis who want to continue to have it their way. So it's just years and years in the making here. And now it's kind of all coming to fruition. We'll see what happens.
And it's really just turned into a cult. And the biggest problem is, like you said, it goes beyond that they don't get any other messages out there. They don't even know anyone that's a conservative. Like, they don't even know anyone. They don't even have a friend that's a conservative. So then it's like they don't even think that the people are real. And then they see one, and it's like seeing a ghost or something, and it's like seeing an evil haunt. And so it sends into a panic. Austin Fletcher of Fleckus Talks, keep up the great work, and we'll continue to report on your videos. We'll see you next time.
Warning. This broadcast contains subject matter that might trigger liberal snowflakes. It's The War Room
with Owen Scheuer.
Watch the live stream at Infowars.com/show.
So President Trump has brought home 14 Americans that were detained overseas. It's not going to stop there. He's working on bringing home a captured journalist in Syria, and he's working on bringing home hostages from Iran as well. Man, a president that truly cares about this country and cares about its people. And if that's the least you can say, that's more than you could say for probably any president during my lifetime when you really get down to the bare bones. Well, I have been a bad boy. I have not been plugging enough this show, and I've already had the crew up here late two nights this week, so we really need your support right now. Infowarsstore.com is what runs everything here. So we're actually sponsored by you and your support at InfowarsStore.com. Now, we have household products like toothpaste and shampoo that is in every house. So you can easily support us by getting your toothpaste with InfowarsStore.com, the Super Blue fluoride-free toothpaste that has the nascent iodine and colloidal silver in it, a powerful toothpaste. And then, of course, the Emrix Essentials All-Natural Herbal Shampoo, also available at InfowarsStore.com. Again, these are household items that are in every house. Why not have them in yours? Then, I have to say, if you don't have an Alexa Pure Breeze air filter in your home yet, what are you waiting for there? Now, I don't know. Guys, pull this up, because I haven't even done my research on this. We might even be sold out. pull up the Alexa Pure Breeze air filter system. We have one. We have them all over our offices. And I was sitting at my desk today, and there's one right in my workspace. I was sitting at my desk today, and I noticed that the air was like, there was a lot of dust kind of floating around, and I just noticed a difference so much. So I went and I grabbed a fan, and I was like, what is going on? And then sure enough, Harrison Smith, who we heard from just a moment ago, said, hey, why isn't the Alexa Pure Breeze on? So this machine is the real deal. I mean, you will notice a difference when you put this in your home. Now, if you have pets, it's great at fighting the dandruff and the odor of a pet. So this is a great product. Why not have clean air in your house with Alexa Pure Breeze air filters from InfoWarsStore.com? I have two in my house. We have them all over the office. Why not get one for your office? Why not get one for your home? Get one for your children's bedrooms. It's all at InfoWarsStore.com, the Alexa Pure Breeze air. There's even a study now. Pull this up, guys. I think it's 90% of people are breathing toxic air. I mean, this is like a no-brainer. It's like, okay, studies show 90% of people are breathing toxic air. Oh my gosh, InfoWars is trying to sell you an air filter. Yeah, that's called common sense, dude. That's like being in the middle of the desert and selling water. Yeah, you're going to sell that water. There it is. 9 out of 10 people globally breathe toxic air, according to the World Health Organization. Oh my gosh. And InfoWars wants to sell you an air filter. They're just a bunch of snake oil salesmen over there. Yeah, the air's toxic, so we sell you an air purifier. My gosh. You caught us. Whoops. Oh, you caught us. We're selling you an air filter because the air is toxic. Wow. You geniuses figured us out. And then we use it too. So that's just how that goes. It's all at InfoWarsStore.com. Hey, make up for me being a bad boy and not plugging enough. I'm gonna get reamed by Alex. He's going to say, Schroyer, you're not plugging. How are we going to expand if you're not plugging? So please support us and take the heat off me by going to InfoWarsStore.com. Try the new bodies at InfoWarsStore.com. 50% off right now. Try the new and improved DNA Force Plus. 50% off at InfoWarsStore.com right now. That's how you support us. That's how we expand. And you have Alex's word to continue expanding, even in lieu of all the attacks. Okay, let me just hit some of these headlines real quick before I segue into what we're going to do in the next segment. So it comes out the FBI had a deep state mole in the Trump campaign. I would stand to reason that that didn't stop. And in fact, the deep state FBI still has moles in the Trump team. But what does that tell you? That the FBI goes rogue and tries to undermine the duly elected president of the United States. What does that tell you? It tells you that there is a shadow government. There is a secret society. The deep state is real. And that's all being exposed. And Mueller's probe is being totally exposed. And the worst thing for him, which the media won't cover, is the fact that the Russians he indicted actually showed up in court and pled not guilty and asked for discovery. So what did Mueller do? He ran, he hid, he's nowhere to be found. He's a coward, he's a fraud. So that whole thing's being blown up, but that's not going to stop the mainstream news from trying to prop it up. So just understand, every story you see about the Mueller probe from the mainstream news has one intention. That's to continue the facade that the Mueller probe is legitimate. 100% propaganda to maintain the facade that the Mueller probe is legitimate. It's fake. It's been exposed. It's illegal. And Robert Mueller's a coward and a fraud who doesn't even show up in court after he indicts people. So he indicts you and then doesn't show up in court and doesn't give you discovery. That's a coward. That's a fraud. How about CNN and MSNBC giving Stormy Daniels $175 million in advertising media? Oh, what did I tell you, folks? Stormy Daniels outsmarted mainstream news, and she used them to market her porn tour. So more credit to Stormy Daniels. I mean, honestly, she's the one that tricked him. Oh, boy, I didn't even get into this. A screaming man runs into London garage shouting, I was attacked with acid. So acid attacks are on the rise in London, so ban acid. But that's just part and parcel, according to Sadiq Khan. WikiLeaks, a tale of two FOIA releases. Here's how the Washington Post handled 24,000 Sarah Palin emails. Public called out for 100 volunteers, which it managed in teams. to find the scandalous parts. In contrast, it avoided such efforts for the 30,000 Hillary Clinton FOIA emails. So the Washington Post literally organizes and attacks when the Sarah Palin emails go out. And then when the Hillary Clinton emails go out, they ignore, they deny, they say it's fake news and you can't look at this. Now you see who the Washington Post really is. West Sacramento launching controversial program watching public social media posts. So now the city of Sacramento is going to be monitoring social media. Hillary Clinton is now blatantly hiding up her back brace. So now you know it's real. She's wearing these scarves everywhere she goes now because her back brace has been exposed. Feds collect record taxes thanks to the tax cuts. Judge awards $3.5 million settlement to the Tea Party groups targeted by the Obama administration. Oh, yeah, that scandal-free Obama that spied on the opponents of the Iran deal, spied on his political opponents, and targeted them with the IRS. You know, Obama, you know, man, that guy's such a treasonous. Speaking of treasonous traitors, here's Maxine Waters, Mad Maxine, on the floor of Congress today.
We are trying to make sure that we're making America great every day in every way. And the best way to do that is to stop talking about discrimination and start talking about the nation. We're coming together as a people in spite of.
Hey, let's fast forward this to Maxine Waters' part.
Gentlemen's time has expired. Members are reminded to address their remarks to the chair. The gentleman from Texas reserves, the gentlelady from California.
Thank you very much. The gentleman, Mr. Kelly, please do not leave because I want you to know that I am more offended as an African-American woman than you will ever be. And this business about making America great again, it is your president that's dividing this country. And don't talk to me about the fact that we don't understand what happens on the automobile. No, I will not.
What the hell is this woman's problem, man?
Okay.
Don't tell me that we don't understand. That's the attitude that's been given toward women time and time again.
The gentlelady will suspend.
Could you imagine spending an hour with this woman?
To address their remarks to the chair. Gentlelady will continue.
I think I'd rather eat paint chips.
And so
probably healthier for me too.
Don't you dare talk.
Look at this entitled woman. She's up there worth millions and millions of dollars, totally oppresses black people, and then tries to virtue signal because of her skin color.
To direct her remarks to the chair.
This is classic Maxine Waters. Maxine Waters got kicked out of Congress in the 90s because she wouldn't follow the rules of engagement. This woman is out of her mind. And on the other side, we're going to show you a special movie we put together, The Truth, about Mad Maxine Waters. You stay classy, Info Warriors.
The War Room. Infowars.com/show. My past, my calling, my name is Maxine. I grew up a black woman in a racist, sexist city. But despite the odds being against me, I made it. I have a right to my anger. I call it rebellion.
The disproportionate numbers of black males that are in prisons around this country are in prisons because they don't have the wealth by which to get fancy lawyers who will go in and ensure that they buy justice for them as white folks can do in America.
This is punishment. This is being very harsh on the most vulnerable people in our society, to include liquor stores in this group of stores that you would not like to have the welfare recipients use.
Waters has been charged with ethics violations for asking regulators to help a bank in which her husband had a financial interest. She denies breaking any house rules.
What people have seen on television in recent days is outlandish behavior by the Tea Party operation in Washington, D.C. And I think that speaks volumes about what's causing problems in Washington, D.C.
What exactly outlandish behavior? Specifically, what do you mean by
that? The shouting,
The Republicans were out there having a great time. They were laughing. They were waving the American flag. They were egging them on. And I thought that was outrageous behavior. I really did.
Guess what this liberal will be all about? This liberal will be all about socializing, basically taking over, and the government running all of your companies.
Sexist nation that couldn't handle a woman president. But then it occurred to me, we didn't lose the election. The Russians stole it. And I'm telling everybody.
I believe that there was a connection between Donald Trump's campaign and the Russians and the Kremlin. Absolutely was in collusion with the Kremlin and Putin in Russia. Our intelligence agencies have already confirmed that the Russians did hack into the DNC. This is a bunch of scumbags. That's what they are.
Those are very strong words, Congressman.
Organized around making money.
Bing, bing, bong, bong, bing, bing, bing.
You have an investigation going on where the president is implicated.
Just to be clear, there has been no actual evidence yet.
No, it has not been.
Okay. I just want
no, it has not. There. Can't people see what's going on? Why do you think they hacked into our election? They hacked into the election because they have to make sure that Donald Trump got elected.
Virtue signal their way up the ladder. And as far as I'm concerned, the Tea Party can go straight to hell.
Look at him in the eye, right? And this one too. Look at him, another one. AKK supporter.
You can't be intimidated. You can't be frightened. As far as I'm concerned, the Tea Party can go straight to hell.
Hey, Maxine Waters, why don't you quit worrying about the Tea Party and look at your own district and the hellhole that's been created there while you were the representative from that district, Maxine?
Maxine Waters is not only a traitor to our nation, but she's not right in the head. In fact, the only people who are crazier than Maxine Waters are the people who support her.
At this stage of my life, I get a little confused sometimes, and it sounds like I'm batshit crazy, but there's a method to my madness, because this struggle, it ain't no joke, and my millennials, they stay woke.
Maxine,
Maxine Waters, the Democratic congresswoman calling for President Trump's impeachment, getting a standing ovation before presenting the award for best fight against the system.
You are very vocal in supporting an investigation that could lead to President Trump being impeached.
We've got to stop his ass. I think the millennials have adopted me because they really do believe I speak truth to power.
And I discovered one thing. Just tell the truth.
Yes. I have not called for impeachment.
Impeach 45.
The president is a liar. His actions are contemptible. And I'm going to fight every day until he's impeached.
I have not called for the impeachment yet. I say it over and over again. Impeachment, impeachment, impeachment.
And I will fight every day until he is impeached.
Should we wait to call for impeachment until we have the answers to that question? Or
well,
some of the questions?
I have not called for impeachment.
You said I'm going to fight every day until he's impeached. That's what you tweeted.
You know people don't like to hear the word impeachment, but we know you like saying it.
He lies every day. He's in bed with Putin and the Russians about oil. And everybody around him are allies with the Kremlin and with the oligarchs of Russia. They're going to take us down.
This is extraordinary. This woman is delusional.
Grabbing a woman's pussy,
that's
which
right.
I don't think he ever did.
He said it.
I go back to...
What grown man talks like that?
I go back to President Clinton.
I don't care about Clinton.
Well, of course
I care about this.
Of course
listen, I'm going to work every day until I get him impeached.
I really do believe that much of what you saw coming out of Trump's mouth was a play from Putin's playbook. I think that when you saw him absolutely calling Hillary crooked...
Crooked Hillary!
Lock her up, all of that was developed. I think that was developed strategically with people from the Kremlin, with Putin.
You obviously have been very critical of James Comey in the past. You said that he had no credibility. I assume that you support the president's decision then to fire his FBI director.
No, I do not necessarily. The FBI director has no credibility.
But if you said that FBI Director James Comey had no credibility, wouldn't you support the fact that the president, then candidate Trump, now President Trump, made the decision to get rid of him?
No, not necessarily.
If Hillary Clinton had won the White House, would you have recommended that she fire FBI Director James Comey?
Well, let me tell you something. If she had won the White House, I believe that given what he did to her and what he tried to do, she should have fired him. Yes, the FBI director has no credibility. We want a diplomatic solution. We do not want war in North Korea, in Aleppo. And the fact that he is wrapping his arms around Putin while Putin is continuing to advance into Korea, North Korea, North Korea at all.
Those goddamn North Koreans.
They are some sneaky bastards.
Stop it.